All right, 25. Yes. Proverbs first, and then we will venture to Psalms. 25, 27, and then we're going to go to Psalm 75-ish, I believe. It gives me some wiggle room. 25, 27. Stop me if you've heard this one. 25, 27. It's unbelievable. You guys crack me up.
I need some jumping jacks really quick.
Keep reading.
Lord is ready.
Nor is it glorious to see what is on the Lord.
Oh, wow.
That's the word of God.
Jerry, let's go one more time on that.
It is not good to eat much honey, nor is it glorious to seek one's own glory.
All right, it's not a good. Is that your translation? I like that. It's not a good to eat too much honey, right? Eat too much honey, what happens? We've had our Oreo conversation in here. Mike's ability to eat a sleeve of Oreos. So honey's good, too much, bad, right? Same with searching out your own glory. I think we may have talked about this idea before. What does that mean, to search out one's own glory? To toot your own horn. I like it, okay? Turn to Psalms, and you're going to get Psalms before Proverbs, right? Still? Yes. Okay. Go to your left. 75. Psalm starts with a P, so in case you can't find it, look for the one right before Proverbs. 75, verse 4. Here is where tooting of horns should occur in Stephen's well-said dialect. 75, verse 4. Somebody pick up there.
Do not lift up your horn.
Keep going.
Do not lift up your horn on high, or speak with haughty neck.
What does it mean to lift up your horn, given the context of what we've seen in Samuel? What did Samuel do to David? Anointed him with a horn of oil, right? So that's exalting somebody else, to pour oil on them, and the horn was used as a ram's horn, literally. Okay, so where should it come from? Verse 6. Emily, that's your cue to read.
For not from the east or from the west, and not from the wilderness comes lifting up, but it is God who executes judgment, putting down one and lifting up another.
The cup is in the hand of the Lord, in wine forms. It is well mixed. The idea is that he's the one that ultimately holds the horn. So in our lives, how would Peter say that? What is his advice on humility? The verse is somewhere in my noggin. I can't think of it right now. About exalting yourself. Thank you. Good job, Bing Bong. God is the one ultimately that exalts us, okay? So if you guys have been around or spent time around people that think a whole lot of themselves, it never comes across as, wow, you are awesome. It's, wow, you think a whole lot of yourself, right? So allow God to deal with you in seasons. Allow God to exalt you when he's ready, okay? David certainly is a guy that wanted to be exalted. He wanted to be put in the position that was promised to him, and he's going to have to wait, I think I told you 30 years, I think it's 20, for that final promise of God to become fulfilled in his life. So regardless of your gifts, regardless of your talents and skills, God is the one that will put you in the right place at the right time. So in the meantime, bloom where you're planted, okay? Be faithful where God's put you, and when he exalts you to a new spot, enjoy it, all right? So there you go. Psalms and Proverbs and Psalms, okay? Fabulous. Where's David today? We cannot do this without Ben.
You had like an 18-hour day yesterday. You didn't get home until close to
11.
Boo.
He took a bye. He's got byes to take, so enjoy your bye. We will make fun of him while he is not here. All right, 1 Samuel. Of all days. Crushing blow. All right, so we watched the beginning of David's rise in 16 yesterday. We kind of mapped it out, and we're going to see now God's systematic removal of all of the crutches in David's life. Okay, we're going to see five specific this morning, things that God does to basically wean David off of anything that he would depend on other than God. Okay, God is purposeful, and it's painful to watch the things that he has to go through. There's going to be sin issues in David's life that God's got to remove. There's healthy things that are good, but God wants him in a certain spot for a season to just be with him. Okay, so we're going to see David go through some pretty rough stuff. Okay, so we finished off in 19. What was it? 10 yesterday. The third attack on David from Saul. Okay, and that kind of begins our first. Let's see if I can do this today. Oh, booger! Friday crew, what have you done? What have you done?
I didn't do that.
I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything. I just pointed it in your general vicinity, and if you felt like that was pointed at you, then okay. All right, so. Stop making me laugh. I can't spell as it is. Crutches. Tease. What just happened? I can't write and listen at the same time. You guys know this. Don't say funny stuff when I'm not listening. So bad. All right, so at 19 where we left off, okay, if you were to start talking through the things that God has removed in David's life, attacked by Saul, speared his head, and it says he flees. So what does he lose? What's the first thing that you see that he loses in this progression? How would you describe that? Okay, so what was his position in the kingdom? Armor bearer. Is he the armor bearer anymore? So he just lost his job, okay? So we'll just put it in our terms. So first thing he loses is his job, okay? That comes with the territory. He doesn't now have the influence that he would have had before, right? Because he had a certain selected position in Saul's kingdom, so he just basically got fired. That's a bad way to get fired, so if your boss ever throws a spear at your head, that's a good sign that you're not going to come back to work tomorrow. Okay, so he's done. All right, so if you want to just take notes, call it what you want. He lost his position. He lost his job. He lost, in 1910, the first of five things that we're going to see. Okay, now, let's pray, and then we will dive into the final four things and watch David's down spiral to the end of the book. We'll see how far we get this morning. All right, so somebody pray for us, and then we'll pick up in 1911 and go from there. Who shall pray? Jeez, thank you.
Father, thank you again for another morning to dive into your word and to study a man after your own heart. Lord, there's so many lessons we can learn from David's life, and especially during this time where you are preparing him for his kingship, Lord, that we would just learn the lessons you had here for us and that we would take them and apply them to our lives. In your name we pray.
Amen. All right. So 1911, somebody pick up there. Jeez.
What is that word?
Can't read that?
Red left off.
Crutches.
Crutches.
C-R-U-T-C-H-E-S. Forgot the C the first time. It was crutches.
Well, you went with capital, and then you went back to lowercase. And then there's a smudge in there that I got lowercase.
That is rough.
I have feelings, people. Okay, I am. I have one, and you're about to hurt it. Okay, so my hunger feeling is in danger right now. Any shots? Shot? Oh. Man, it's 6 in the morning. Why?
It's 10 o'clock.
Right, exactly. Where did that... What just happened? What are we talking about? I know it's Friday, JD, but take it easy. No, you need no shots for Israel. So, yeah. I was just reading... unrelated, but as long as we're unrelated... They were talking about Obama's over there right now, or I think he's still there. He may be in Palestine now, but he's been in negotiations with Netanyahu, their prime minister, trying to get peace in the Middle East, right? So good luck with that. But they were talking about just how safe it was. They were talking through Obama's travels over there and how dangerous it would be, you know, whatever. So, and they said, you're like 8 times more at risk of getting shot in Chicago than you are anywhere in Jerusalem, I thought. So it's actually more dangerous for them to come here than it is for us to go there. So keep that in mind. So it's very much a first world country, and yeah, so no shots, no issues. You can drink the water just about everywhere. Now, I will try to remember which places you can't. And if I forget to tell you, you'll know. Gotta go. I think I forgot to put makeup on. So there you go. All right. I think it's almost everywhere, depending on what hotel we're in
the Dead Sea.
So that's the only place that's questionable. But yes. No shots. You're good. Does everybody have passports at this point, as long as we're completely off topic? Yes. Is it touching your hand? Like, has it touched your hand? It's like you have it, you've seen it? Okay.
Check the expiration date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This would be a really bad time to, yeah, so, okay. Speaking of, where's Jeremy?
He's on the way.
Who else are we missing? Is that it?
I think so.
Oh, I know, yes.
I was just reminding you.
Am I that bad? Wow! The real Sonny, please step forward. I'm sorry, who are you? What? How did you get here? I am unrestrained now. Oh, wow. You know what? It's right. Just bring in one next week. Aye, aye, aye. All right, 1911. Wow. No more shots, JD. Read 1911. It's the First Samuel.
Saul sent messengers to David's house to watch him. He might kill him in the morning. But Michal, David's wife, told him, if you do not escape with your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed.
All right, so he flees from Saul, goes home, and Saul says, dude, I know where you live. You're married to my daughter, so this isn't that difficult. So he sends people to go kill him, right? And whether it's McCall or Michael, I don't know. I always call her Michael, but I don't want to share her name either, so McCall's fine. Either way, she's dirty. So this instance is actually going to be good. So she says to David, hey, this is not going to go well for you. You need to leave. You need to leave now. So verse 12, keep going, Mitch.
So McCall let David down through the window, and he fled away and escaped.
All right, so he is able to basically escape because of her advice, and she gives him a heads up. Okay. The problem is what she does after he leaves. Keep going.
McCall took an image and laid it on the bed and put a pillow of goat's hair at its head and covered it with clothes.
Anybody got a different translation for image? Idol. Really? In David's house. So where would she have gotten an idol from? Where would she have learned about that? Dad, growing up, right? And David allows it. Okay. Now keep in mind, David is 17, 18 at this point when he gets married. Okay, so he's young. Okay, so he's learning, but this is something that this is the type of gal he's married. Okay, so yeah, I have idols. That's what I learned in my house growing up. So yes, maybe she was a looker and that's what David was attracted to. I don't know, but we're going to find out that she does not have the character to boot. So she's got yucky on the inside. Okay. So, 14, keep going.
And when Saul sent messengers to take David, she said, he is sick. Then Saul sent messengers to see David, saying, bring him up to me in the bed that I may kill him.
So you get this is straight out of The Godfather. You've got the head of an animal in your bed, right? The messengers go down, and she says, oh yeah, he's laying right there, he's sick. So they go back up and tell Saul. Saul says, bring him on his bed. Carry his bed up to me. Go back and get him so I can kill him. Like, dang, you are not screwing around. So I don't care what he is. If he's got the flu, then I'll kill him while he's throwing up. So that's dirty, right? Saul sent messengers, bring him to me. 16, the messengers entered. Behold, the household idol was on the bed with the quilt of goat's hair at its head. Okay, so they got fooled. So here is where it all goes awry for Michael. Read 15, or 17, rather. Now, to be fair to Michael, this is dad saying to her, why have you deceived me? Now, What's Saul's reputation when you stab him in the back? It's not real good, right? So she, and I probably would have done the same thing. This is her answer. The rest of 17. People, read my mind. It's March. We should have this relationship done now.
And Michael answered Saul. He said to me, "Let me go. Why should I kill you?"
So he said, she says back to Saul, why is this situation taking place? What is her explanation for it?
He was going to kill me.
Yeah, I'll kill you if you don't let me go. So it wasn't, hey, I'm trying to help David. It's, he said he was going to kill me, Dad, if I don't let him go. Okay, so she lies, okay? We are never going to see this relationship between David and Michal right ever again, okay? So the next time that they meet each other, it's under some pretty rough circumstances and to the point where she's going to flat out clown him publicly, okay? So if you were to put a second loss for David, what would it be?
Wife.
His wife, okay? Can y'all read that okay? That's a W. Let me rewrite that. You good? Let me dot my I. Better? Okay. Wife, okay? So you lose your wife and your job pretty much in the same day, 24-hour period. That's not a good start, right? At my house, that would be, that would qualify for hanging out with JD. Gosh! You guys are awful. All of you, go have another cup of coffee and then come back when you're ready to laugh. You just got it. See, I even...
That, I got you.
Thank you. First time? Okay, see? Oh, JD, I like you. I will go get shots with you anytime. when Brad listens to that later, you make sure he saw me do this. No, I saw Mike do that. That's what he's talking about.
Yes.
I don't know why it's deleted again. One of the residents screwed it up. It's those residents. It's the Friday crew. They're haywire. All right. So, job. Wife, okay? Let's keep going on 18 and see what else he loses.
Now David fled and escaped, and he came to Samuel at Ramah and told him all that Saul had done.
All right, now you're going to see that these guys have a good relationship as well. So he comes to Samuel, final judge. Samuel is about to, he's old, okay? But they've got a great relationship. So he flees to him. You see what David's doing? Loses his job. Where does he go next immediately? His wife, okay? Loses his wife, where does he go? His mentor. Who does David turn to in times of difficulty? Big picture. People, right? Is that a good thing? Yeah, right? You like that about David. He doesn't hide. He doesn't isolate himself. Okay, so he turns to people, which is good. God is, I think, weaning him off people. This is a 17, 18-year-old kid. He's saying, okay, David, it's time for you and me. And we're going to get real intimate here, okay? So that's the idea. So it's good, but, okay, God is doing something systematically in his life, okay? So wife and now mentor, okay? It was told to Saul, behold, verse 19, David is at Naoth in Ramah. So this is Saul's, or Samuel's hometown. Saul gets word of where David went. Saul sends messengers to go take David, but when they saw the company of prophets prophesying with Samuel standing and presiding over them, the Spirit of God came upon the messengers of Saul and they prophesied. So Saul says, go get them. He sends a crew down to Samuel. Okay, as they're approaching, Samuel's got a group of prophets and they're prophesying. Samuel's or Saul's men that walk up on Samuel's prophets stop and they start prophesying. Like, what's that about? Okay, so 21, Saul hears about it and he goes, they did what? So the idea was they went into some, in this case, some I don't know, like almost like comatose state where they're prophesying and are unable to complete what they were supposed to do and they're whatever, okay? So there you go. So there's your audio visual if you need it, all right? So Saul says, great, send another group, okay? So 21 does it again. Same thing happens, okay? Saul sends now a third group in verse 21. They also prophesied. So he sent three groups of people. God stops every one of them, puts them in this like trance, and they start uttering whatever, okay? And he's like, what the heck, right? 22, he says, great, here's what we'll do. Keep reading.
Then he himself went to Ramah and came to the great well that is in Sychar.
Okay, so he's He's going to go himself. Okay, so he goes down there. Okay, he proceeded there, verse 23, to Ramah. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him so that he went along prophesying continually until he came to Naoth in Ramah. He stripped off his clothes, verse 24, and he too prophesied before Samuel. He lay down naked all day, all night, and just lay down and prophesied before Samuel. Like, God, that's funny, right? Here's the king of Israel who you just basically put in a trance. He strips down naked and prophesies for 24 hours on his way to try to get David, right? It's like, God's going to take care of you one way or the other. That's funny, okay? So, unless you thought God did not have a sense of humor. Someone needs to write that book, by the way. Balaam, naked prophets. I mean, that's good stuff, okay? That's funny. No, I don't want credit for that if it goes public. All right, so anyway. So now, verse 20, or chapter 20, verse 1. So he's been protected now as he's been there with Samuel by God. 20, verse 1, what happens? I'm not answering any questions about nakedness this morning. Okay.
Do we know how old David is?
Yes. So I made a note. I'll tell you right now. I'll tell you right now. I even bought a copy of it, but you can't see nothing because of the projectors. Because my thingy's broken. All right. So at, assuming that David was 13, okay, which is a, when he fought David and Goliath. 13 at David and Goliath. Okay. He marries Michael at 16. The first time David gets, that David tries to get killed by Saul, he's 17. So at the end of chapter 19, he's 17 years old right now, okay? So yeah, we're dealing with a high school junior. Just keep that in mind, okay? Yeah, and he may get to drive. We'll see. Yep. So 17 right now, okay? That would put, by the way, based on my buddy's math from a paper he turned into DTS. Jonathan is 30 right now. Okay, so they're about 13 years different in age. Okay, so Mitch, how old are you? 20, 21. Brad's 40. So maybe, so who's, how old did you say you were? 28. So that's probably closer. So, but that's a guy-girl thing. Anyway, if you were to hang out with Brad. In terms of friendship, that's not someone that you would normally pursue. You're going to pursue a peer. So as you just kind of get an idea of, there's a significant age gap, okay? I'm 37. So, you know what I mean? Something like that. That's the idea of their friendship, all right? So we got a 17-year-old kid right now who's married, lost his job. I don't know what just happened. There you go. I am. And it was a lot of fun on his 40th birthday. I'm like, dude, you're old. My wife is 3 weeks older than me, so every birthday it's like, man, you're old. I'm only 36. She's like, yeah, but in 3 weeks you're going to be 37. So, yep. So there you go. She's older and better looking. So there you go. So what have we lost? 20 verse 1. Read that.
Then David fled from Naoth and came and said before Jonathan.
He flees from where? Which, what did she say? Gesundheit. So if he's fled from there, who did he just lose?
Samuel,
his mentor. I like mentor. Okay. So this is the last time David's ever going to see Samuel alive. Okay. So job, wife, mentor, back to back to back days, right? So we're like in a, I don't know, week period. This isn't long. Okay. This goes down fast. Okay. So last time he sees Samuel alive is in the last verse of chapter 19, okay? So he flees, and now who does he go to? Jonathan, like his best friend, right? His buddy, his companion. Again, good quality. David goes to people, okay? Is there a point where people can become an unhealthy, get off me, crutch to you? Sorry, there's multiple conversations occurring this morning in my head. The answer is yes, okay? So, all right, so keep that in mind. For those of you that are high and harmonizers or just relational, that is a wonderful quality to have about you, right? But when we lean too much on people and want to please them or whatever, that's where that can get dangerous. And God is, you can see what he's doing. He's taking people out of David's life, okay? So now he's going to go to Jonathan, and you, is we're in the string of losing crutches, you can imagine what's about to happen with he and Jonathan's relationship, okay? So he flees and came to Jonathan, and we don't know exactly where they're at. They're probably somewhere in Benjamin right now. I would show you, but our plug's busted, so we'll figure that out later. So he comes to him. What have I done? What is my iniquity? What is my sin before me that your father is seeking my life? So David's like, what's going on? Like, why have I had a spear hurled at my head multiple times? Why is your dad trying to kill me? Like, what have I done, right? So he feels blameless in this. He feels innocent, okay? Jonathan tries to talk him off the cliff in verse 2. Read that.
He said to him, far from it, you shall not die. Behold, my father does nothing, either great or small, without disclosing it to me. And why should my father hide this from me? Is it not so? But David bowed again, saying, my father knows well that I have found favor in your eyes, and he thinks, do not let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death.
All right, so talk to me about where David is emotionally right now. There is hardly a step between me and death. He's panicked, right? He's in a bad spot, okay? I want you to notice, and you're going to see a theme in Jonathan and David's conversation. What does he say? What does Jonathan specifically say to David in verse 2, knowing exactly where he's at emotionally? You're not going to die. What is he doing? Yeah, but perspective, okay? Relax. You're okay. I know it's rough, okay? He doesn't negate his feelings or tell him that it's not hard. He says, buddy, you're not going to die. How does Jonathan know that? You're the anointed king. You're going to be king. You can't die, okay? Relax. So he gives him, in the midst of emotional this, what does he give him? Truth, okay? He inserts truth. This is what we know, okay? Regardless of how you feel, this is what's true. So relax, okay? Peace is a good answer too. That's okay. It's acceptable. So you'll see that consistently with Jonathan, that he communicates to him, you're okay. And that's what a good friend ought to do, okay? He levels the playing field, talks him off the cliff, buddy, you're okay. But David's in a tough spot, and he's like, man, he thinks he's at a hard spot now. He hasn't even seen rock bottom yet. It's coming, okay? So David and Jonathan have this conversation, and he's like, man, I don't think my dad wants to kill you. And David's like, man, I'm pretty sure he does, right? I think you may be wrong on that one, Jonathan. So they're going to have a dialogue to figure out, okay, how mad is Saul? And they're going to come up with this plot, okay? So verse 5, David says to Jonathan, man, tomorrow night we're supposed to eat together. Like, I'm supposed to be at your pops' house, right, and we're all going to have a meal. Tell your dad that I went home to Bethlehem to go celebrate a festival with my family, okay? If he's like, oh, that's fine, great, David's not here and he went home to go eat with his family, cool. If he wigs out, right, and starts throwing spears again, then we're going to know it's not good between us, and he'll freak out, okay? And Jonathan promises him to say, listen, buddy, I'm on your team. I will communicate anything that my dad says to me. I'll make sure it gets back to you, okay? So David's even concerned, like, he sees the tension that Jonathan's under of like, man, I feel like you're loyal to me, but yet your dad's a psychopath, and if you cross him, this could end badly for you. So Jonathan has communicated time and time again to David. Read verse 9. This is David's kind of, or Jonathan's reassurance to him that he's going to do him right in the midst of this.
Jonathan said, far be it from you, for if I should indeed learn that evil has been decided by my father to come upon you, then I would not tell you about it.
He says, man, if I find out, far be it from me from not to communicate that to you. Okay, and he asks, he basically says, may God kill me if I don't communicate these things to you, okay? So they make this agreement, and then they're going to renew something that they talked about earlier, okay? There it is, verse 13, Stephen. Pick up there. This is Jonathan speaking to David again.
If it please my father to do you harm, may the Lord do so to Jonathan and more also, if I do not make it known to you and send you away, that you may go in safety. And may the Lord be with you as he has been with my father.
Okay, so he promises him, buddy, I am on your team. You need not panic about this. Okay, so you can see where David's at. Like, he's like, he's trying to figure out who's safe right now. Michael's not safe. Samuel, I can't go to. Jonathan, are you safe? Are you a good friend? Okay, and he needs to know. All right, 14, we're going to see them renew something that they've talked about previously.
If I am still alive, will you not show me the loving kindness of the Lord that that I may not die.
Now, what's Jonathan saying? This seems odd in context. If I'm still alive, will you show me loving kindness, or what word do you guess that would be? Okay, which is what word in Hebrew? Starts with a ch, ends with esed. Hesed, okay? So, grace, all right? Be gracious to me that I may not die, okay? What is Jonathan reading into? What does he realize is going to happen if God has anointed David king? Yeah. What would be the problem with Jonathan still being around if David became king? Normally he would be, right? So if you were a dirty king like Saul, what would you do with any potential competing lines? Kill him. And who else? Which would be who? And Jonathan's sons. Any male in Jonathan's family that could potentially win the favor of the people and say, hey, I got a right to the throne. My grandfather was the first king in Israel. Who's this chump? Like, as soon as David does something wrong and he can turn the hearts of the people back towards Saul and his family, you would want them all extinguished, okay? And if you were a dirty king, it's exactly what you would do. That would be normal practice. So what's Jonathan asking for in this moment? Man, I know this is not normal, okay? I need you to be beyond gracious to me. And who else? Read 15. So what else is he asking for? Not just me, David. My whole family. Everybody that comes after me, including, up the chain, Saul. Okay? My house. My dad. My kids. Anybody and everybody. Okay? I want you guys to remember this. Okay? We're going to see this come up again. But this is a... Who's around for this, by the way? This covenant. David and Jonathan. It's just the two of them. Okay? So outside of this circle... Nobody knows that this agreement has been made, okay? So he promises Jonathan, okay, all right? So Jonathan, verse 16, made a covenant with the house of David, saying, may the Lord require it at the hands of David's enemies. Meaning, this is sealed. We're making this covenant. So he recognizes that, again, David's going to be the next king, and his house is in jeopardy of being now at odds with David's house because of Saul. Okay. Even though this friendship currently stands, in the future, this could all change. Okay. Jonathan made a vow, verse 17, again, because his love for him, because he loved him as his own, as he loved his own life. Okay. So they have a very cool, significant relationship. Okay. And Jonathan has pledged his allegiance to David yet again. Okay. So, with me? All right. So, so here's the plan. Okay. So we talked about earlier. Hey, we're going to figure out if Saul basically wants Jonathan or David dead or not. Jonathan is in this plot to figure it out. And David now basically asks, how am I going to know if he's ticked or not? Okay, so I'm going to go hide. And this is the plan. Okay, so read 18. Let's just go like 18 through 21-ish. Okay, so that's the idea. So Jonathan's going to go out in the field. He's going to shoot arrows. David's going to be hiding in that field. He's going to tell his arrow getter to go get the arrows. And if he says, hey, they're right there, pick them up, then David will know, okay, it's safe. If he tells the lad, hey, they're way past you, keep going, then David knows that Saul's mad and he shouldn't come back to the kingdom. Okay, and that's basically exactly what happens. So this goes down. Verse 26, Saul did not speak anything the first day, knowing that David wasn't at the table, so he keeps his mouth closed. And verse 26, he says, maybe the reason that David isn't here is because he's unclean. It was an accident. He did something. he's going through the Levitical process of getting right so he can come meet with us. 27, it occurs the next day, David's place was empty, so Saul said to Jonathan, his son, why has the son of Jesse not come to the meal today, either yesterday or today? Okay, verse 28, here's the answer that Jonathan gives.
Found favor in your sight, please let me get away that I may see my brother. For this reason, he has not come to the king's table.
All right, so that was the story they agreed upon. Tell him I'm going to go back with my family, we're going to have a meal together, and I want to go see my family. Okay, 30, this is Saul's response.
Then Saul's anger burned against Jonathan, and he said to him, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman.
I mean, that's dirty. I don't know what cussing is like in Hebrew, but I'm pretty sure Saul just did. You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, right? While mom's sitting at the table, right? Like, wow, you dirty, filthy mouth. Go, somebody go wash your mouth out, right? Keep going.
Do I not know that you are choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness?
Ooh, gosh. Like, dude, she's right here. She's at dinner, right? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Therefore, now send and bring him to me, for he must surely die. So, Saul happy? Not so much. This is not going well for David. Okay. Now, I want you to notice just in Saul's response. What are you continuing to see in Saul in terms of his interactions with David? Do you see that insecurity rising in him, that fear of David rising in him? What does he specifically say to Jonathan about this? Jonathan, this is a you problem. If he's alive, you can't be king. Jonathan clearly realizes that, right? He knows, but he says, I don't care, right? Because God's anointed him, okay? Where do you think relationship is with Saul and God right now? Like, has it been super clear to Saul that the kingdom is being stripped from you? Right? Very clear. And what's Saul's attitude? I am going to hang on to it at all costs. I don't care what God says. I'm gonna get what I want, right? That's a dangerous place to be, okay? You know who's going to win that battle, right? God usually is able to take care of his own business, so he will, all right? So Saul wigs out, okay? And you're going to see him wig out to a whole new degree today, okay? So Jonathan answers Saul in verse 32. This doesn't go so well. Read that.
Then Jonathan answers Saul his father, why should he be put to death? What has he done?
Okay, so ask a simple question, and this is the answer he gets.
But Saul hurled a spear at him to strike him.
Whoa, what? This is his son. He throws a spear at Jonathan at the dinner table. Like, man, that had to be an interesting dinner table, right? It's one thing to have a food fight. Yeah, he just takes everywhere, right? When dad shows up with a spear, go get carry out, okay? Good idea. This is the commentary on this is even better. So Saul hold a spear at Jonathan, strike him down. 33, keep going, JD.
So Jonathan knew that, or
yep.
His father was determined to put David to death.
Okay, that was a pretty clear sign, right? So, and you too, by the way, Jonathan, so in case you missed that, right? So, yeah, that's just a bad, bad day, right? So this all goes awry. They go play this whole scenario out, just like they talked about with the arrows and the lad. Okay, verse 36, he tells the lad, run. The arrows which I'm about to shoot, you're going to go pick them up. The lad gets to the place in verse 37 where Jonathan's arrows were, and he says, is not the arrow beyond you, right? And that means to David, all is not well. Okay, you need to run. You need to leave. So he runs off. Jonathan and David are now able to have kind of one last conversation before they part. Look at verse 41. Pick up there.
And as soon as the boy had gone, David rose from beside the stone heap and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times. And they kissed one another and wept with one another, David weeping the most. Then Jonathan said to David, go in peace, because we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord shall be between me and you, and between my offspring and your offspring forever. And he rose and departed, and Jonathan went.
All right, so you see a grieving, right? Because they know the reality of what's about to happen. Okay, so that's not good. By the way, and just to deal with the text paints this in a way, I think with our American eyes, we kind of go, what's that friendship really like, right? I heard a gay female priest at the University of North Texas talk through this passage and talk about how Jonathan and David are actually gay, and that was the nature of their relationship, okay? And that's why, that was her primary grounds for why homosexuality was actually approved in the Bible, contrary to what Old Testament and New Testament said about it, okay? So if you ever hear that argument, it's bogus. But just I wanted to point that out, okay? They have a very, they obviously have an intimate friendship. It's not inappropriate. It's not obviously at that level. We clearly see that David is very much a fan of women. He has a lot of them around. And that's, you know, but it's, anyway, it was just a weird talk and an odd deal. And it was at a forum where there was a lot of back and forth and a pretty heated discussion, as you can imagine. So anyway, I thought it would be worth at least bringing up, but that was a hot topic of conversation back in my day in 1952 when I went to college. So there you go. All right. Question. You see, I think it's 5 or 6 times in the New Testament where you're commanded to greet each other with a holy kiss. That's male to male, female to female. That's just that was their greeting, right? Yep. So, guys, if you don't like kissing other guys, don't go to France, because that's right. That's just how they. Like, whoa, hey, what just happened? Obviously on the cheek, but that's, you know, it's weird. It's just not our. It's weird to us because we're Americans, but that's very normative in their culture. So anyway, for what it's worth. Yeah, yeah. It's just, it's a, you're like, okay, right? So, but, and again, cultures are cultures. So, but that's just not a part of our tradition, but man, it is theirs. And anyway, so not to ruin the moment, but I feel like it's purposeful to bring it up. They are breaking down because they recognize their friendship is going to be forever torn. So now what has David just lost? Yeah, he just lost his best friend, right? Okay, so bad day. All right? His job, his position, his bestie, his Twinkie, Twinsie, cupcake, whatever. So he's going downhill. All right? So David is going to run. Where do you think to? Where would you guess? Person. Where is he going to go next? To another person. Okay, so 21. David came to Nob, to Ahimelech, the priest. This is the high priest right now. Okay, so in his day, Ahimelech is the guy, and Ahimelech has a question for him. Hey, why are you here alone, and why is nobody with you? This is abnormal, okay? So normally, as David would travel as a warrior, who would be with him? His whole posse, right? So for him to show up by himself is an odd thing. So David and Ahimelech have a history together, okay? Here's David's answer, verse 2 to Ahimelech. This is, now, mind you, this is the high priest he's speaking to.
Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever it is here.
Okay, so what is his answer to Ahimelech in verse 2? What does he say? Read between the lines. I can't tell you. It's a secret mission from Saul, right?
Secret.
Right? That's basically what he's saying. I've commissioned to meet with this young man in such and such a place, but that's all you can know. Now, what food do you have on hand? So what does he do to the high priest? What do you call that? He lied to him, right? That's significant, right? That's like, oh, hey, Brad, what are you doing today? Oh, I'm doing such and such, or one of the elders. I mean, that's a pretty significant person to lie to, okay? Ahimelech has a history with David, has no reason not to believe him, so he says, okay, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever can be found. Whatever you have, I'm hungry, okay? 4, he said, hey, there's no ordinary bread on hand, but there is consecrated bread. If only you've the young men have kept themselves from women. So there's bread that's going to be a part of our rituals in the tabernacle, you know, show bread stuff, that bread that's going to be used for, it's like communion bread. That would be a little bit more special, right? So it's always funny to me after communion and everyone cleans up, we're like, what do we do with all this whole bread? You know, so it's always an odd, right? You know, everybody's pounding communion bread. You're like, I guess that's okay, but I always feel weird eating it. Like, tastes really good, God. I bought it from Trader Joe's 3 hours ago, and now we're using it for communion, and now I'm going to have it for dinner. Anyway, so nothing special about it. But this stuff is. So David says, great, no problem. Surely women have been kept from us as previously when I was sent out on vessels, the young men who were holy. That was an ordinary journey. How much more then this day will their vessels be holy? So yeah, like that's normative in the past. This is a secret mission. I'm like extra clean. So just give me the bread. Yes. In days past when that was normative? Yeah, he said, yeah, of course. When we went out in days past, he's alone right now. But that's kind of the idea. So, okay. Yeah, I don't know. The 21:1 makes it pretty clear. Why are you alone and no one with you? So I read into that and go, that's probably, that's how at least Ahimelech saw it, okay? So the priest gives him consecrated bread, for there was no bread there, but the bread of the presence which was removed before the Lord. So this was stuff that was used in, again, the tabernacle service or what have you, okay? Now, one of the filthiest people in your Bible you're about to meet, verse 7.
Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord. His name was
Doeg.
The Edomite, yep. Chief of Saul's herdsmen.
All right, so Doeg the Edomite. Okay, Doeg is filthy, okay? And you're going to find out why here in a bit, okay? So he's there. So one of Saul's, you know, employees, right? So he's the chief shepherd. He's there, and he's watching this whole conversation go down. He's detained, we find out, for whatever reason. So either he was unclean, he had to go to the priest to get clean, he was suspected of leprosy, whatever reason, he had to go to the priest to get right. So he's in the presence. David knows he's there, but yet has this conversation anyway and realizes, in hindsight, that may not have been a good idea, right? When I've got someone who's loyal to Saul, who's watched me lie now to Ahimelech, right? He's going to go back, and that information, obviously, he's going to go back to Saul, right? That's a bad day for David, okay? So, David sends now to, or says to Ahimelech, man, I didn't bring a spear or a sword with me. The mission was so secret, in fact, I had to leave in such a rush that I didn't get a sword. Do you have anything? Okay, and Ahimelech says, yeah, I do, by the way. Verse 9. So he says, yeah, I got the sword you killed Goliath with. Do you want that? And he's like, yeah, that'll be just fine. Thank you very much, right? There's none like it. Give it to me. So he takes the sword that he kills Goliath with. Again, perpetuating this lie. Why are you here alone? Oh, I'm on a secret mission. Oh, why don't you have a sword? Well, I had to leave in a rush, right? He's like, no, you're actually being chased out by Saul. So he lies to Ahimelech, gets what he needs. So he's got food, and now he's got some sense of protection, and now he leaves, okay? Verse 10, David arose and fled that day from Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. That strike you as weird? Where does he go? Where's Gath? Right. So who are these people? Philistines. Like, he's going to the Philistines for protection at this point. Like, how bad is your day when you're like, my wife's gone, my job's gone, my mentor's gone, my best friend's gone, I got nothing, I'm just trying to put food in my mouth, I'm lying to the high priest just to get a sword and some protection, where do I go? Nowhere safe in the kingdom. You know what I'll do? I'll go to the Philistines and I'll hide amongst my enemies. That sounds like a better option than Saul getting me. Like, mentally, you've got to be in a pretty dark place for that to seem like a good idea, right? He's going to the coast, which is good. Not sure that was a vacation. Yeah. Okay. You're going to see here in a minute. Certainly not. Yes. And there is a Carmel on their coast, just like ours. Okay. But different.
Verse
So he rises and goes now to Achish, king of Gath. All right. So he rolls into Gath, and we got a problem, verse 11.
And the servants of Achish said to him, "Is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing to one another of him in dances? Saul struck down his 1,000 and David his 10,000.
So what happens? He rolls into town, and they're like, "We know that guy. You've been in the Fresno Bee. We've seen your face in the paper. Aren't you the guy that they sing all the songs about? Aren't you the guy that killed 10,000 people and saw only got 1,000? Aren't you that guy?" Now what's David doing? Oh, doo-doo, my cover just got blown, right? Like, I'm no longer just some bearded Israelite rolling into town that would have looked like everybody else, right? But they realize, no, buddy, you are not a Philistine. You're an Israelite. This is not a safe place for you. Verse 12, so what's he do? Ooh. So who does he fear now? King of, as he should, right? You're in enemy territory, and you just got found out, right? You're a spy, and it's one on like a million now. You're dead, okay? So I want you to see how far David is willing to go.
So he changed his behavior before them and pretended to be insane in their hands and made marks on the doors of the gate and let spittle blood down his pate.
That's right. So what does he do? He fakes like he's insane, right? Slobbers all over himself, makes scratch marks on the door. I mean, what else do I have to do? Like, he has to convince these people, no. I just have a resemblance of David, but clearly I'm out of my mind. I'm psycho, right? Whatever. So then this is Achish, his response in verse 14.
Then Achish said to his servants, "Behold, you see the man is mad. Why then have you brought him to me? Do I lack madmen that you have brought this fellow to behave such as a madman?"
That may be one of my favorite. Like, do I not have enough idiots already around that you would bring me another idiot? You're right, a madman, right? So apparently this was a normal thing, okay? So what do you call that? If you had to take the fifth and last thing that he loses, how would you label that? Yeah, he lost his dignity. What else? Maybe his pride. That's pretty low, would you agree? I mean, when you're resorting to faking like a madman, faking like you're insane, like you've got, I mean, that's a pretty deep hole that you've gotten yourself in, okay? That is the last crutch that we're going to see God strip from him kind of in this series of removal of things, okay? So there you go. His job, his wife, his mentor, his best friend, and his dignity, his self-respect, his pride. I mean, he's in a dark place, okay? It's a bad deal. So as a result of that, he's going to flee again, okay? Just make note, for those of you guys that like to read Psalms, one of the cool things about Psalms is that we know at certain portions where they're written. Psalm 56 is written right here, okay? And I'll bring up another one today, okay? So that is actually here in just a second. Psalm 56 is written during this time, all right? So reference that in light of kind of what's going on in David's life, all right? Now, watch where David goes. Chapter 22, verse 1.
David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him.
Okay, so where does he go? 22:1. The caves of Adullam. Okay, you guys remember the spelunking caves I told you about that we're going to go in? Right there. Okay, that's where David goes. Okay, now again, you talk about hide and go seek to the nth degree, you can't find anybody in these, okay? Miles and miles and miles of underground caves, okay? And if you're hiding in them, there's always in and out and whatever, you can't find anybody, okay? So you're underground, you're protected. Some of these are big open areas, right? And some of them are like army crawl, hands and knees, okay? So when you're in them, you're in them, okay? So David goes and hides in those, okay? So we are... Adullam is in the Shephelah, okay? It's basically, it's pretty close to Azekah, okay? Where David and Goliath fight, we're southeast of Azekah. That's where the caves of Adullam are, okay? So in that general area. Someone had a question. We're going to find out. Yes, okay? So first of all, which is funny to me, okay? Who comes to see him? 22:1. Family. Now, Saul's had a really difficult time finding David, but yet his family's like, oh yeah, we know where he's at. And they go right to him, right? Jonathan's going to do the exact same thing. You're like, man. So the idea is David had found out his family was coming for whatever reason and reveals himself to them. Jonathan knows where he's at, but for whatever reason, God will not allow Saul to touch David. And we obviously know the reason, but the people that need to find him can find him. The people that can't, okay? So his family comes. What do you think his family brought? Probably some food and water, right? Okay. Notice who else rallies to him, okay? Verse 2.
And everyone who was in distress and everyone who was in debt and everyone who was bitter in soul gathered to him. And he became captain over them. And there were with him about 400 men.
Who are these guys? Bitter, debt, dismayed, discontent.
People that don't like Saul.
People that don't like Saul, right? These are people that have been hosed by Saul. And who do they rally to? David. Now, given what he just went through, why is that so important? He needs people. David is a guy that needs people around him. Now, has God stripped him of everything? Yeah. So you get the impression that David has been kind of worked over by God. He's done the alone thing now. He's written some psalms, by the way. Psalm 142 is written right here, 22:1 and following. When we go to Adullam and go in the caves, we will read Psalm 142 in the caves of Adullam where David hid. Okay? And we don't know the exact spot, but we know, obviously, the caves. 142. Okay? 142. God now brings refreshment to David at the right time. Okay? He strips him first, and then he brings a band of guys that are the down and outers. These are the rejects. Okay? These are not blue chip favorite guys in the kingdom. These are the rejected people that have no better place to go, but you're going to find out they are loyal, they are faithful, they are good guys to David. 400 men rally to him, okay? And he becomes captain over them. They see him as a leader amongst him, okay? So that's the idea, all right?
Sounds like that story, what was his name?
Jephthah? Yep.
Like that.
Yeah, so you see kind of those same qualities of a guy from the wrong side of the tracks that gets done wrong, is, you know, his family kicks him out because he's the youngest kid, and, you know, or the wife of a harlot or son of a harlot. Yeah, but the right people come at the right time. So very similar to a guy like Jephthah, absolutely, okay? So now, this is an odd request, right? What does he do in verse 3?
And David went from there to Mizpah of Moab, and he said to the king of Moab, please let my father and my mother stay with you, till I know what God will do for me.
Where does he go? Moab. Where's Moab? East of the Jordan, cross the Dead Sea. Who's in Moab? Friends or enemies? Enemies. So he goes to the king of Moab and says, I want you to take my mom and dad until I know what's going to happen with me. And you imagine probably his family as well. What is he saying? Why would he be taking his family and putting them in Moab? Because it ain't safe for them in Israel, right? What is he concerned about? Psycho Saul and what he's going to do to his family, right? Well, I can't find you. I'll start killing the people you love, right? Every terrorist movie, right? Like, I'll kill your wife, and that's how we'll, or whatever. So David realizes, like, his relationship with Saul is that bad, and he knows how dirty Saul can be to say, that's a possibility. You're safer in Moab. Like, you know, Moab's not, you know, they've got a good relationship. You've got Ruth. You've got some of that stuff that happened in the last 100 or so years. So there's some positive. So maybe there's some back and forth that's healthier at this point, but still probably not the best place. But David sees that as a potential, the best of the worst scenario, right? So that's what he does, okay? So verse 4, keep going.
And when he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him all the time that David was in the stronghold, then the prophet God said to David, do not remain in the stronghold. Depart and go into the land of Judah. So David departed and went to the forest of Hermon.
All right, so David is, Masada's on the other side of the Dead Sea, okay? Not Masada. Gath, where, Moab, sorry. And his family's heading over there. As David comes back into town, he goes to this place called the Stronghold, okay? We're going to go to a place in Israel that's right by there called Masada, okay? The word stronghold in Hebrew is actually Masada. Now, whether or not it's the exact same place that we're going to visit, or another place. Masada is one of the coolest places ever. It is completely flat all around, and there's this one, like, 2,000-foot hill with a 360-degree view, and there's just open plains all the way around. So you've got flat land and a pimple. So in terms of defensible location, you can see people coming from 10 miles away. It is perfect, and it is impenetrable, and you're on the high ground. So people are coming up, you just throw stones at them, right? So it's really cool. So we'll go visit that spot out in the middle of the desert, super hot. Herod, the crazy weird king, when Jesus was alive, decided to kill all the babies, that Herod. Herod makes this a fortress in his day, okay? So Herod's a nut job that you're going to learn about when we get over there, okay? No. So, nope. So it doesn't have a huge Old Testament context. Herod's going to make it great, but David, more than likely, it's given where he's at, given where he's going to go next, probably went to Masada, okay? It would have made a ton of sense because he was safe and nobody could get to him, okay? So, anyway, so God says, don't stay there. Go back into Judah. Go back into the land, which is scary for him, right? It's like, no, go back to where Saul is, all right? Verse 6, let's watch what happens.
When Saul heard that David and the men who were with him had been discovered, now Saul was sitting in Gibeah under the tamarisk tree on the height with his spear in his hand, and all the servants were standing around.
Like, that's just a bad scene, right? Saul sitting with a spear in his hand, you're like, oh, this is not going to go well, right? So watch what happens.
Saul said to his servants who stood around him, "Hear now, O Benjaminites, will the son of Jesse also give to all of you fields and vineyards? Will he make you all commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds?"
So he's speaking to the Benjamites. Where is Saul from? Benjamin. So he's saying, hey, can David do all these things for you? Like, you're family to me. I'll give you fields. I'll give you whatever. Verse 8, for all of you have conspired against me so that there is no one who discloses to me when my son makes a covenant with the son of Jesse, and there is none of you who is sorry for me or discloses to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in ambush as it is this day. What does that sound like from Saul? What is he saying? Yeah, that and like, nobody likes me. Everybody's conspiring against me. Nobody tells me anything. He's whining. He's insecure. He's, again, focused on David. It's like, what else is going on in your kingdom today? But all he's worried about at this point in his life is David, okay? So, now, look who speaks up, verse 9.
Then answered Doeg the Edomite, who stood by the servants of Saul. I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Amalek, the son of Ahitub.
Okay, so he says, oh, I saw David. He was with Ahimelech, Ahitub's son, right? I saw him. He inquired of the Lord. Ahitub gave him provisions and gave him the sword of Goliath. How do you think Saul's about to respond to that? Like, oh, no, he didn't, right? He's going to get hot mad, okay? The king sent someone to summon Ahimelech, the priest. Hey, someone wants to talk to you. Like, now, where's Ahimelech in this whole thing? What does he think's happened? Yeah, David, you were sent here by Saul. You're on a secret mission, right? And you needed food and you need a sword. Great, okay? So, verse 12, he comes into his presence, and Saul says, listen now, son of Ahitub. And he says, here I am. Saul said to him, why have you and the son of Jesse conspired against me, in that you have given him bread and a sword and inquired of God for him, so that he would rise up against me by lying in ambush this day? Okay? And here's Ahitub's answer, verse 14. Or Ahimelech's answer, sorry, son of Ahitub. Ahimelech, verse 14.
Then Ahimelech answered the king, and who among all your servants is so faithful as David, who is the king's son-in-law and captain over your bodyguard and honored in your house? Is today the first time that I have inquired of God for him? No. Let not the king impute anything to his servant or to all the house of my father, for your servant has known nothing of all this, much or little.
So what is his answer? What does he say to Saul? Like, dude, I've done nothing wrong. Like, this is the chief guy in your kingdom, buddy. Like, is this the first time that I've inquired on his behalf to God? Like, no. Like, this is what we've been doing this whole time. What are you talking about? Like, he has no idea what's going on, okay? And the king said to the guards who were attending him, turn around and put the priests of the Lord to death. because their hand is also with David, and because they knew that he was fleeing and did not reveal it to me. So what is Saul's answer? Kill everybody. Kill Doeg, or kill Ahimelech, kill Ahiatub, his pops, kill all the JV priests that are there, kill them all. Like, wow. Like, do you see what this insecurity and fear is doing in Saul? Like, Ahimelech is like, dude, do I have a reason to lie to you? I've done this before. I have no idea what you're talking about, right? And he's being, Ahimelech is completely honest in this, right? Yep. It's the same, it's the exact same thing. And this is what happened when fear drives decisions. What's the worst case scenario? You're all lying to me. That's the worst case scenario. Kill everybody. Like, dude, that's a priest. Like, are they known to be fairly honest? I think so, right? If you can count on anyone to give him the, like, really? So Saul says, kill them all. Now, I want you to notice, like, this is how dirty this is, okay? Read the end of 17 there. Saul says, hey, guys, kill everybody. But the servants.
But the servants of the king would not put out their hand to strike the priests of the Lord.
Why not? Because they're priests. Like, that's ridiculous. So they look at Saul and they're like, buddy, you need a soda or something. I don't know, right? Go have a beef jerky. You need to chill and get your blood sugar back up. I don't know. Saul's in a bad spot, okay? Verse 18. Read this.
Then the king said to Doeg, you turn and strike the priests.
So here you go. Doeg the Edomite. You kill everybody, Doeg.
Doeg the Edomite turned and struck down the priests, and he killed on that day 85 persons who wore the linen.
Oh, what a dirty, dirty, I got other words, right? 85 priests he kills, just murders right there by himself. Like, I don't know how long that takes. I don't know what that looked like, but he just kills them all, right? This guy has no problem with it, right? He probably saw that as a chance to exalt himself amongst the king. Great, Saul loved me. I got no problem taking a bunch of innocent people's lives. Now, why did that happen, by the way? Why did the situation even come to be? David lied. Are there consequences to our sin? Yeah. Will God forgive us? Absolutely. Does David's shrapnel affect other people? Yeah, in a pretty significant way, right? That's tough, okay? David's going to get word of this. Watch this. Keep going to 19.
And Nob, the city of the priests, he put to the sword. Both man and woman, child and infant, ox, donkey, and sheep, he put to the sword.
This guy's dirty, right? Great, I'll kill everybody. I'll kill the whole town of Nob where these guys are from, okay? Keep going.
But one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar.
Abiathar. He's going to be a great companion of David's.
Escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the priests of the Lord. And David said to Abiathar, I knew on that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul, I have occasioned the death of all the persons of your father's house. Stay with me, do not be afraid, for he who seeks my life seeks your life.
What does he say in verse 22? I have brought about the death of every person in your father's household. What do you call that? What's that, Stephanie? He takes responsibility. Now, he's just telling a guy, the reason your father got murdered is my fault. And all your brothers that just got murdered, it's my fault. I mean, that's a confession. So you see David's heart even in the midst of this? He doesn't blame. You know, he didn't intend for this to happen. He's not the one that wielded the sword. He's not the one that gave the command. But he recognizes at the end of the day, that's on me. I did that. I caused that situation to play itself out because of my little lie that turned into this festering thing, okay? So he owns it. But what does he say to Abiathar? 23.
Stay with me.
Yeah, so you're safe, basically, with me, okay? Saul's after you. He's after me. Okay, we're all in this together at this point. So he takes care of him, okay? So that's the idea, all right? So. Yeah. It's a hard one, right? Because it's a lie is a lie is a lie, right? It's a it's an issue every time. So, yeah, I don't know. Somehow God connected that to her faith, and it was a she was putting her life on the line, and by defending these spies, and I'm not sure. So that's one of those hard stories where do you look at that and go, is it okay to lie? It's like, is there a 0.5% chance times when it's that's appropriate? And I go, that's a stretch. I don't know. So, but yeah, David was covering his own backside. His motives were very different than Rahab's, and that's the only thing I can see is, I mean, it's dishonest, but yeah. You guys heard the story of, is it Anne Frank, where she's hiding, she's not hiding, but whoever was hiding her and the rest of the Jews during the Holocaust, they had a secret, you know, like basement underneath their kitchen table, and you would access the compartment by removing the kitchen table. They would crawl under and they would put the kitchen table back over. Well, the Germans came in their house and said, you're hiding fugitives. Where are they? And because she didn't want to lie, she said, under the table. They were like, and left. So they thought she meant under the table. They're not there, so great. That's how the story goes, apparently. So anyway, I don't know. So that's a hard one. That's one of those. That's a tough issue. Okay, 23. Okay, let's pick up there. Let's see if we can finish maybe this one in the next chapter, and we'll continue on with David. Okay, so. He's been stripped of about everything. He's seeing now the consequences of his sin. He's got a band of buddies or band of brothers now that are with him, that are supporting him. And in 23:1, he gets news. Read that.
They told David, behold, the Philistines are fighting against Keilah and are robbing the threshing floors.
Okay, Keilah is a city of Judah. Okay, so this is in the Shephelah. This is where David's from. And they're like, hey, the Philistines have come in. And they're basically attacking the harvest. Okay, so a lot like Gideon. They bring out the harvest, they're winnowing the wheat or whatever, and now the Philistines come in and try to basically kill them and take the fruits of their labor. So David says, man, God, shall I go attack these Philistines? Like, do you want me to go reveal myself to everybody, go on the attack and defend these people, okay? And the Lord said to David, verse 2, go and attack the Philistines and deliver Keilah, okay? What's David concerned about, even in this time? The people, right? You see David's continual heart for the people. You see why he's going to be such a great king? Like, he's in hiding. He's scared to death for his life. His people are in danger. And he's like, I feel responsibility to do something about that. Now, does Saul have an army? Yeah. He's the king. So that's Saul's job. Go defend the people. How does David see it? I feel obligated to do something. So he says to God, should I? And God says, absolutely. Green light. Okay. David's men said to him, behold, we are afraid here in Judah. How much more if we go to Keilah against the ranks of the Philistines? It's like, man, we're standing on center stage with a spotlight and telling everybody where we're at. Are you sure, David? So David's like, let me go ask God one more time. Verse 4. Okay. He says, God, are you sure? And God says, yep, arise, go down to Keilah, for I will give the Philistines into your hand. So he assures David, you will win the battle. They go to Keilah. Verse 5, read that.
David and his men went to Keilah and fought with the Philistines, and he led away their livestock and struck them with a great slaughter. Thus David delivered the inhabitants of Keilah.
All right, good. And that's family for him. This is in Judah. So David's like, man, I delivered my family and the people. These would have been people that David knows. Verse 7, when it was told to Saul that David had come to Keilah, Saul said, God has delivered him into my hand, for he has shut himself in by entering a city with a double gate and bars. That's a bad deal. Okay, so they walked into a fortified city that would have been protected. Now this fortified city just became basically their tomb. So he's inside a city with walls and fortified gates and scrooby-dooby-doos. So Saul says, oh, that's perfect. So they're sitting ducks, basically. I know exactly where they are, and they can't move. They're not at Adullam and underground, and like David's in a bad spot, okay? Keep going in verse... Saul obviously going to go to war in verse 8. Keep reading verse 9.
To destroy the city on my account. Will the men of Keilah surrender me into his hand? Will Saul come down just as your servant has heard? O Lord God of Israel, I pray, tell your servant.
All right, so this is a crazy situation. So David gets word that God, that Saul is after him. He's going to come basically raise Keilah and kill everybody there, David and his men included. And he says, Abiathar, come here. We need to find out if that's true. God, will this happen? And God says, he will come down. End of verse 11. David said, will the men of Keilah surrender me and my men into the hand of Saul? And the Lord said, they will surrender you. So what's God saying? Yep, they're coming. They're coming, and they're going to destroy the city. And then after they're done destroying the city, they're going to take the men of Keilah and say, give me David and give me all his men. God, is that right? And God says, yep. Okay. David and his men, about 600 men, arose and departed from Keilah, and they went out wherever they could go. Okay. So they say, let's leave, right? So God just foretold the future, and then what happened? We get like a new future. It's like that's one of those deals where God says, yeah, that's what's going to occur. So y'all should leave, right? So it's one of those strange, God knows what's going to happen, and he allows for another option, okay? So he escapes along with his men. Saul finds out about it. They give pursuit. 14, watch where they go. Okay, so back where he came from, that's probably Masada. So he goes and hides again from Saul on the shore of the Dead Sea, okay, on the west-hand shore of the Dead Sea where Masada is. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not deliver him into his hand. So continually protected by God, okay? Now, verse 7 or 15, rather, keep going.
David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life. David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Beresh, and Jonathan, Saul's son, rose.
Again, bizarre. Saul's looking for him. Jonathan goes right to him, right? And encourages him, strengthens him, remind me of who he is. You see what Jonathan does in 16? Just encourages him in God. So he's just, you're okay. Hang in there. Don't lose it, right? Keep it together. So neat deal. Okay, so he's hiding again. He's in the desert and is encouraged at a time where, man, he needed a friend. And Jonathan steps in and does that, okay? Keep going in 17 and watch what he says.
And he said to him, do not fear, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. You shall be king of Israel, and I shall be next to you. Saul, my father, also knows this. And the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. David remained at Resh, and Jonathan went home.
You guys see the significance of this over and over and over again. They make a covenant. They renew a covenant. They talk about this covenant, okay? It's significant between these two, these vows that they have exchanged to be loyal to one another, okay? So Jonathan is continuing to demonstrate his loyalty to David by encouraging him and strengthening him and letting him know, man, you're okay. You're going to rule one day, and I will be next to you. I will rule at your side, okay? I will be your servant is what he's saying, okay? And that, unfortunately, that day will never come. But that is Jonathan's heart that would occur, okay? So they make a covenant, okay? So the Ziphites come to Saul. These guys are in the wilderness of Ziph. This is where David is. The people that are there come to Saul and say in verse 19, is David not hiding with us in the stronghold at Horesh, the hill country of Hakilah, which is south of Yeshimon? Okay, so Yeshimon, you guys remember our three words for desert that we've just mentioned briefly? Midbar, Siya, and Yeshimon. Yeshimon would have been the most difficult of deserts to live in, okay? So no water, no food. So David is living in a miserable, barren, awful place, okay? And the Ziphites who are in that area say, that's where he's at, okay? So he gets punked again. Saul goes, great, 22, go find out for sure, find out where he's hanging out. He sends men, they find him, verse 24, they arose in verse 24 and went to Ziph before Saul. David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon in the Arabah to the south of Yeshimon. The Arabah is the just south of the Dead Sea, probably one of the most difficult pieces of terrain. That is the area known to be specifically called Yeshimon, which is, again, the most difficult and hideous terrain to try to live in. Okay, so they are going to try to get David. They know where he's at. They basically, in 25 and following, Saul has cornered him. 26, read that, and let's watch the situation unfold.
Saul went on one side of the mountain, and David and side of the mountain, and David was hurrying to get away from Saul, for Saul and his men were surrounding David and his men to seize them.
So literally, David's on like this mountain pass. Saul's on one side and David's on the other, and they are stuck because they can't. He's found out where he's at. The Ziphites have ratted him out. They know exactly where they're at, and they've got an army coming to get him, and they're protected by each side of a mountain, but that's all they've got, okay? And lo and behold, watch what God does in verse 27.
But a messenger came to Saul saying, "Hurry and come, for the Philistines have made a raid on the land."
So right as he's about to take David, he doesn't know it yet, doesn't realize how close he is, but he knows he's pursuing him. A messenger comes and says, "Hey, back home, Philistines are attacking our house," okay? 28, Saul returned from pursuing David, went to meet the Philistines, therefore they escaped and called that place the Rock of Escape. David went up from there and stayed in the strongholds of En-Gedi, okay? Another place that we will visit on our trip to Israel, okay? En-Gedi is a super cool place. I won't ruin it for you, but David's going to spend a lot of time there as well, okay? And chapter 24 is all about this thing that happens in En-Gedi, okay? So God literally, at the very last second, David realized, I'm a sitting duck. And a guy comes in and says, "Hey, there's an attack back home." Saul has to leave, go home, take his men with him, fight the Philistines. And they realize, oh, okay, and this happens at En-Gedi, okay? Now, 24 may be one of the funniest, again, good Hebrew humor. Read 24, 1 and 2, and let's find out what's going on. 1, 2, and 3.
When Saul returned from following the Philistines, he was told, "Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi." Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all of Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of the wild goats' rock.
All right, so En-Gedi is similar to Adullam in that there's lots of caves, but this is on a kind of a mountain top as opposed to being flat in the Shephelah. So up in these mountainous deals, there's all these caves, okay, where you can go hide in various places, okay? So watch what happens in 3.
And he came to the sheepfolds by the way, where there was a cave, and Saul went to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the innermost parts of the cave.
All right, so Saul has to use the restroom, okay? So he goes for some privacy and goes in this cave to relieve himself. Anybody have a different translation for relieve? The Hebrew here is very helpful, okay? That word relieve is actually two Hebrew words. One means cover, and the other means feet. Oh. Are you with me? When do you cover your feet when you go to the bathroom? This is not number one. He's covering his feet. Are you with me? Okay, you guys got the mental picture in your head? Okay, he's covered his feet, all right? So he's sitting down, okay? He's reading Sports Illustrated, all right? So he is taking a time out, right? Where are David and his men? In the back of what cave? The same cave where Saul is relieving himself, where Saul is by himself in a fairly vulnerable position. Yes, would you agree? Okay. So he's taking care of business. And the men of the cave, verse 4, they say, "Behold, this is the day of which the Lord said to you, 'Behold, I am about to give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it seems good to you.' David arose." Well, we'll see what happens. Okay. So his men say to him, right? This is the day that God said, one day God will deliver Saul into your hands. David, go kill him. Right? Now, if you're David, you've been running a while, right? It's been a long stretch. You've been in the wilderness. You're dealing with, where do I get food? Where do I get water? Raids on towns, trying to survive. And there's Saul, literally a sitting duck. What is your response if you're, what would you do? You walk over there right now, you kill Saul, what happens? King. Done. Okay, game over, I win, okay? Hey, guys, by the way, that we're following Saul, he's dead, I just killed him. I'm David, I'm your new king, okay? Game over, okay? Watch what David does. End of verse 4.
Then David arose and stealthily cut off a corner of Saul's robe.
Like, that had to be awkward on so many levels, right? So he walks over there, behind him, cuts off a piece of his robe and takes it with him, okay? And walks back to his men, okay? Verse 6, keep going.
He said to him,
I'm sorry, verse 5, keep going.
His heart struck him because he had cut off a corner of Saul's robe. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord. the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed.
So talk to me about David's theology. He feels bad about cutting off a corner of his robe, which is a whole other interesting piece of theology that we won't get into. But he feels convicted about it, okay? And here's ultimately why he feels convicted. What is David saying in verse 6? What does that mean? Far be it from me, because of the Lord, that I should do this thing to the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, for he is the Lord's anointed. Yeah. So who put Saul on the throne? God. So how does David feel about taking him off the throne? Not my job. God's job. Okay? If God wants him off the throne, then God needs to remove him. So what would have been the temptation in the midst of this moment? I mean, obviously. Kill him. Why? Does it look circumstantially like this is the right decision? Absolutely. Right? You guys remember the decision-making triangle I showed you? Up, in, out. A lot of people, I told you guys, go backwards and they start with out and they go, oh, look at all these circumstances lining themselves up. Clearly, this is what God wants, and they back themselves into the theology, right? Back themselves into why this is a good decision, and then back themselves into Scripture and find out Scripture that they need to support the conclusion that they've already arrived to in their head. Dangerous. David won't do that. He says, no, what I know to be true is God put him there. I am not going to look at a circumstance that I know is not right, though it looks tempting, and say, God's behind that. Okay? That's a tough place to be. Okay? Love David's theology. Why do you think God's doing this? Why would God have set the table like this? Absolutely. Right? Here you go, David. What are you going to do? You're tired, you're hungry, you're worn out, you haven't slept, you haven't seen your wife. I'm going to give you an opportunity to immediately exalt yourself, right? Did Satan do the exact same thing to Jesus in the wilderness? Exalt yourself now. Prove to the people that you're God. You know, and Jesus says, no, right? This had to be a test. And every one of his men are saying, kill him now, right? Verse 7, look what David has to do. Read that.
David persuaded his men with these words and did not allow them to rise up against Saul.
That word persuaded is literally the word to tear apart, okay? So he's having to, like, strongly communicate to his men, do not touch Saul, right? So there's one guy in the cave that doesn't want Saul dead, and that's David. The other 400 are like, I'll kill him, and I'll kill him now, okay? We're going to find out. God doesn't do this just once to David. He does it twice. Chapter 26, you're going to see, chapter 24, take two. He's going to get the exact same situation laid at his feet. Are you sure, David? Are you sure you don't want to do this? So, tough, okay? So we'll pick up the rest of that next week. But David makes a great decision. I want you to notice just simple good theology. Circumstances do not dictate how David behaves, and I like that about him, okay? He clings to Scripture. He's already written Psalms, right? He knows for some reason that is not what God wants, all right? So, there you are. You guys have a great weekend. Enjoy the weather. Be safe. We will see you. Oh, Date Face. We are off all next week, too. Yes. Next week, spring break. I'm going to come and teach, and if you guys want to come, no. Weird. Perfect. Bring our recorders. Yeah.